Blomqvist took leave of the host of She just before 5. They had spent the afternoon filling in the gaps in the material. Then Blomqvist had gone to make up and subjected himself to a long interview on film. One question had been put to him which he struggled to answer in a coherent way, and they had to film that section several times. How is it possible that civil servants in the Swedish government will go so far as to commit murder? Blomqvist had brooded over the question long before She's host had asked it. The section must have considered Zalachenko an unacceptable threat, but it was still not a satisfactory answer. The reply he eventually gave was not satisfactory either. The only reasonable explanation I can give is that over the years the section developed into a cult, in the true sense of the word. They became like Newtby, or the pastor Jim Jones, or something like that. They write their own laws, within which concepts, like right and wrong, have ceased to be relevant. And through these laws they imagine themselves isolated from normal society. It sounds like some sort of mental illness, don't you think? That wouldn't be an inaccurate description. Blomqvist took the tunnelbana to Slussen. It was too early to go to Samir's cauldron. He stood on Södermalmstorg for a while. He was worried still, yet all of a sudden life felt right again. It was not until Berger came back to Millennium that he realized how terribly he had missed her. Besides, her retaking of the helm had not led to any internal strife. Ericsson had reverted happily to the position of managing editor, indeed was almost ecstatic, as she put it, that life would now return to normal. Berger's coming back had also meant that everyone discovered how incredibly understaffed they had been during the past 3 months. Berger had had to resume her duties at Millennium at a run, and she and Ericsson managed to tackle together some of the organizational issues that had been piling up. Blomqvist decided to buy the evening papers and have coffee at Java on Hornsgarten to kill time before he met Berger. Prosecutor Ragnhild Gustafsson of the National Prosecutor's Office set her reading glasses on the conference table and studied the group. She had a lined but apple-cheeked face and short, greying hair. She had been a prosecutor for 25 years and had worked at the NPO since the early 90s. She was 58. Only 3 weeks had passed since she had been summoned to the NPO to meet Superintendent Ed Klinth, Director of Constitutional Protection. That day she had been busily finishing up one or two routine matters so she could begin her 6-week leave at her cabin on the island of Husaru with a clear conscience. Instead, she had been assigned to lead the investigation of a group of civil servants who went by the name of The Section. Her vacation plans had to be shelved. She had been advised that this would be her priority for the foreseeable future, and she had been given more or less free rein to shape her operational team and make the necessary decisions.
"This may prove to be one of the most sensational criminal investigations this country has witnessed," the Prosecutor General had told her. She was beginning to think he was right. She had listened with increasing amazement to Ed Klinth's summary of the situation and the investigation he had undertaken at the instruction of the Prime Minister. The investigation was not yet complete, but he believed that his team had come far enough to be able to present the case to a prosecutor. First, Gustafsson had reviewed all the material that Ed Klinth had delivered. When the sheer scope of the criminal activity began to emerge, she realized that every decision she made would someday be pored over by historians and their readers. Since then, she had spent every waking minute trying to come to grips with the numerous crimes. The case was unique in Swedish law, and since it involved charting criminal activity that had gone on for at least 30 years, she recognized the need for a very particular kind of operational team. She was reminded of the Italian government's anti-mafia investigators, who had been forced in the 70s and 80s to work almost underground in order to survive. She knew why Ed Klinth himself had been bound to work in secret. He did not know whom he could trust. Her first action was to call in 3 colleagues from the NPO. She selected people she had known for many years. Then she hired a renowned historian who had worked on the Crime Prevention Council to help with an analysis of the growth of security police responsibilities and powers over the decades. She formally appointed Inspector Figuerola head of the investigation. At this point, the investigation of the section had taken on a constitutionally valid form. It could now be viewed like any other police investigation, even though its operation would be conducted in absolute secrecy. Over the past 2 weeks, Prosecutor Gustafsson had summoned a large number of individuals to official but extremely discreet interviews. As well as with Ed Klinth and Figuerola, interviews had been conducted with criminal inspectors Bublansky, Modig, Anderson, and Holmberg. She had called in Mikael Blomqvist, Malin Eriksson,
Henry Cortez, Christa Malm, Advocate Giannini, Dragan Armansky, and Suzanne Linder, and she had herself gone to visit Lisbeth Salander's former guardian, Holger Palmgren. Apart from the members of Millennium's staff who on principle did not answer questions that might reveal the identity of their sources, all had readily provided detailed answers, and in some cases supporting documentation as well. Prosecutor Gustafsson had not been at all pleased to have been presented with a timetable that had been determined by Millennium. It meant that she would have to order the arrest of a number of individuals on a specific date. She knew that ideally she would have had several months of preparation before the investigation reached its present stage, but she had no choice. Blomqvist had been adamant. Millennium was not subject to any governmental ordinances or regulations, and he intended to publish the story on day 3 of Salander's trial. Gustafsson was thus compelled to adjust her own schedule to strike at the same time, so that those individuals who were under suspicion would not be given a chance to disappear along with the evidence. Blomqvist received a surprising degree of support from Ed Klinth and Figueroa, and the prosecutor came to see that Blomqvist's plan had certain clear advantages. As prosecutor, she would get just the kind of fully focused media backup she needed to push forward the prosecution. In addition, the whole process would move ahead so quickly that this complex investigation would not have time to leak into the halls of the bureaucracy, and thus risk being unearthed by the section. Blomqvist's first priority is to achieve justice for Salander. Nailing the section is merely a byproduct, Figueroa said. The trial of Lisbeth Salander was to commence on Wednesday, in 2 days' time. The meeting on Monday involved doing a review of the latest material available to them and dividing up the work assignments. 13 people participated in the meeting. From NPO, Ragnhild Gustafsson had brought her 2 closest colleagues. From Constitutional Protection, Inspector Monica Figueroa had come with Blad and Berglund. Ed Klinth, as Director of Constitutional Protection, was sitting in as an observer. But Gustafsson had decided that a matter of this importance could not credibly be restricted to SIS. She had therefore called in Inspector Bublansky and his team, consisting of Murdig, Holmberg and Anderson from the regular police force. They had, after all, been working on the Salander case since Easter and were familiar with all the details. Gustafsson had also called in Prosecutor Jervas and Inspector Erlander from the Göteborg police. The investigation of the section had a direct connection to the investigation of the murder of Alexander Zalichenko. When Figueroa mentioned that former Prime Minister Thorbjörn Fälldin might have to take the stand as a witness, Holmberg and Modig were scarcely able to conceal their discomfort.